The views expressed on the following program are not necessarily the views of WIBA, its management, sponsors, or staff. In other words, the views expressed on the following program are those of the host. Broadcasting live from Planet Madison, where everything is beyond parody, this is Upfront with Vicki McKenna, the voice of reason in a city of chaos. To be a part of the program, call 321-1310 or toll free at 877-235-1310 or email Vicki at WIBA.com. Now here's your host, Vicki McKenna, on News Talk 1310 WIBA and WIBA.com.
Welcome to the program. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Why does it sound like I'm laughing? Well, because if you don't laugh, you're going to cry. We are going to talk about the amount of money we are going to pay for exactly the same stuff with regard to our school spending here in Madison. Don Severson from Active Citizens for Education is standing by. That is coming up. Also on the program, We'll be chatting a bit more about that train. Yes. And we'll report on yesterday's primary results. Good night for Sarah Palin, to be sure. Those who mock her may mock her to their own detriment. All that's coming up, though. We're going to start with school spending. Don Severson, how are you?
I've been better.
Well, I've been better, too. But like I said, if you don't laugh, you're going to cry.
I know.
All right. So for breathing air in Madison, for my silly decision to choose to buy a home in Madison. I know.
Congrats.
Thanks. Appreciate that. It's going to cost me an additional $225 a year. That's about right?
For an average priced home or valued home, yes.
$225. And what am I going to get for my $225 property tax increase?
Well, I've been saying...
Wait, better outcomes than in closing the achievement gap?
Not.
Increasing reading performance?
Not.
Increasing standardized, test performance?
Not.
Anything?
More of the same.
Okay, so $225 for more of the same.
That's what it amounts to.
And how many people were at the last budget hearing?
Four? Three spoke.
And how many of the four, since I'm guessing you're one, so how many of the three left over were in favor of tax increases?
All three.
Okay. So that's...
I didn't speak.
All right. It's not funny. And they will argue that, oh my goodness, the downturn in the economy had such a pressure and the decline in state aids, and we just absolutely need to do this. But the question is... Why does everyone expect the citizens of Madison to pay more? And with that additional amount of money comes no promise of improvement, not even in accounting practices, transparency, not even a promise of assessment of some of the programs, some of the classes we have, some of the services we have. No discussion on trying to see if we can't find ways to cut costs. Not even just looking at the way we do contracting for products like paper, construction paper.
They are doing some
glue. $225.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What's the justification for that?
Because they can.
What was their justification to try to placate us from being angry about it?
Well, with the loss of 15% in state aids, along with that came the authority to the school districts to be able to raise property taxes to make up the difference. So of that $28 million they were talking about as a whole, they could have taxed for almost all of that.
And what's the total amount we're going to be taxed at?
I think it's about $17 million.
$17 million. Okay. All right, so an additional $17 million we've got to cough up, and we don't even get to go to referendum for this because this is something that has to do with state aids. So they don't have to ask us for this.
Well, part of
because I'm going to tell you what, people would say no if they had to ask us for this money.
Well, see, part of that is a referendum that was passed 2 years ago in 2008 because the vote was to allow the district to raise revenue above the cap for $5 million the first year, an additional $4 million this year, and an additional $4 million next year. So that's already a part of this.
we already voted in favor of that.
Yep.
So where's all, you know, so that was the money that we, that was supposed to get us by, right? That was the money that we were supposed to need at the top end, and the citizens of Madison, instead of doing, well, you know what, and this is a problem across the state, in fact, across the country,
right,
in school districts where you got three people show up at a budget hearing, none of them, you know, care about the tax issue except to raise taxes, presumably because they have, you know, they have some sort of constituency connection to the tax increase. It's as if people have kind of checked out on education and they've decided that they want to put their attention someplace else. Why do you think that's happened, particularly in Madison?
Well, I think people have given up.
Why do you think they've given up?
Because they don't think they can make a difference. And
I think that's true. I think it's exactly the reason why people have given up.
It's really a vicious circle. But the only people who show up are those who don't want their ox gored, their program cut, or their services, and the rest of the people don't show because they get hissed at, they get ignored, they don't get listened to at all meaningfully.
Yeah, and I think that's true. You can go all the way back, and I remember covering school board back when Nancy Mistel was on the school board. You can go all the way back to, so that was, so what, 96,
mm-hmm.
97? All the way back then, and the same thing was going on, and people get angry, they'd show up, and ultimately the same thing would happen. And unless we could actually go to the polls on a referendum question, there really wasn't much that parents who disagreed with the status quo could do. In terms of curriculum, discipline, that's another big complaint that is actually becoming an even bigger complaint lately. Couldn't do much about the teacher's salary benefits, the way the contracts were negotiated. Now we've lost the QEO.
Right.
And so it's going to be even more of the same. But I think it is a sad commentary if it is true that people have given up. Because what we're getting for an extra $225 isn't better outcomes, Don.
No.
What doesn't, I don't think, click with people is that Madison School District's performance on Wisconsin Knowledge and Concepts Test isn't exactly something to brag about. Now, it's not Milwaukee. You know, nothing is.
But we're on the slope.
But we're on a slope. So we're not bringing up the top end. We're actually starting to join up with the groups getting toward the bottom end there. And we are supposed to be the Emerald City School District in the state. This is the one everybody brags about. Oh, go to Madison. Madison's the best.
Well, that's a self-proclamation.
It is, but it's been one that's been fairly successfully sold. And we actually have kids who are not getting it done in reading and math. We have an achievement gap that isn't closing. All of this money that we are identifying to spend on various different programs, everything from reading recovery to, you know, a 4K program, you know, to any number of other kinds of assistance, special education, more bodies down at the Doyle Building, presumably to courier highlighter pens to teachers across the district. And we're not making dents here, and no one has got it in their mind in Madison that additional monies have to be tied to increases in performance.
Well, not only increases, what about the money we already have?
And what about the money we've already got?
You know, you
mentioned, how do we keep spending more money and we keep doing more poorly?
Because we keep giving them more money and nothing changes.
Because we keep giving them more money. Yes,
exactly.
And nothing changes. How long have you and I been griping about the way they do administrative contracts? You know, the way they negotiate contracts, they don't even know what the state aids are going to look like. Don't even know what really we're going to have in terms of revenue. And so they're basically negotiating contracts on rosy scenario guesses on what it's going to look like. And we're committed. We're now locked into those contracts. Can't even change that to put that on a timeline that makes it easier for the taxpayers to, you know, absorb the impact of that.
Exactly.
Or at least open up the opportunity to say, if things go very bad in the economy, we can change. Don, what do we do? What can we do?
Well, people have got to get off their duffs and vote. And also get off their duffs and be candidates for the school board to hold the administration and hold the community accountable. That's not happening.
Yeah, and we got the new superintendent, and he came in with a lot of fanfare and a lot of high hopes that he was going to be the guy that kind of cracked the nut on some of these problems that seemed entrenched, what appeared to be because of cozy political relationships with a former superintendent. And he's been here for what now, 3 years?
Two years.
What's it look like he's on the pathway to doing? I mean, I'm going to guess that this guy is really knuckling down and he's trying to get at it and it's just taking him longer than he imagined.
No, he's not providing the leadership that's necessary, in my view. He has some good, people skills and good listening skills, which are part of his background as a social worker. But you can't use social work skills.
Why don't we hire an old CEO, a retired CEO, as superintendent instead? Instead of an old social worker, why don't we hire an old business guy?
That'll never fly.
Who actually would understand the concept of doing things with some kind of common sense in mind.
That's what ought to be done, but it won't happen.
Right.
Yet.
All right. So we've got a board with too few members who can make a difference because they're always in the minority.
Correct.
And that is the same old broken record we've been playing for years and years and years, where you've got a few, right-oriented people who are looking to try to do something about this. And this board's no different. We got a couple of them like we had a few years ago, like we had back when Mistel was on the board. And they're always the minority. And we're always in the same position. And I guess I'm trying to figure out why parents would tolerate this, particularly university-educated parents and college-educated parents who cannot possibly look at these test scores and say that's good enough. Are they comparing it to Milwaukee and saying, well, we're not Milwaukee? And then believing that any kind of positive comparison means excellence instead of comparing it to when they went to school? Because when I went to school, things were great, And now when you have people who are happy with their schools, they're not comparing it to their schools. They're comparing it to the worst schools in the district or the worst schools in the state.
Well, the syndrome is it's the irresponsibility or the fault of everybody else but us. No, it's easy to blame the tests. It's easy to blame the state because they don't provide enough money. It's easy to blame, whoever and whatever. But don't take responsibility.
They never have they?
Yeah.
They really don't.
And it's really hard to understand.
It's always state aids. It's always the test scores, which, by the way, were standards agreed upon by all the districts in Wisconsin. It's always teaching to the test. It's No Child Left Behind. Now it's Race to the Top they're complaining about. Yeah. And the list goes on. But at some point, you gotta say, look, if we're not, and as Brian Schimming loves to say, your rich uncle is on life support at this point. That's known as state aids. Those are going to keep getting smaller and smaller. You had better figure out a game plan to deal without state aids that does not always include property tax increases for the same or worse performance.
See, the difficulty is that we have a majority of people on the board and a majority of disinterested people in the community that don't understand even the data. For example, they did a redo of the reading recovery assessment that was done 6 years ago. On some of the same flawed process, but you know what they found? 6 years ago, they found that only 53% of the pupils, grades 1 through 3 in that program, could read at the third grade level at the end of third grade. 6 years ago, you know what it was this year?
It was like 44%.
42%.
42%.
And the superintendent makes a recommendation to the Board of Education to expand the program.
And we even had board members who were talking about cutting back on this program.
And then it was on the cut list for this coming budget. You know, the first thing they took off the table?
Reading recovery. Why? What is it about this particular program? It's been around for years and years. I mean, it's been around. It's kind of institutionalized. It has the same problems in other districts, unless it is done in a very, well-screened and intensive way. So that screened for students who actually respond to this particular type of teaching. And it is done in a super intensive way. It typically produces the same results elsewhere as it does in Madison. It's not a special Madison kind of thing.
It's
a national program. So why do we keep doing it when it's clearly not helping kids? In fact, it seems to be showing worse performance, which suggests to me not necessarily that the program performs any worse than it did before, but now we've got an additional crop of kids who are needing services of that program than we had 20 years ago and are now actually showing this program to be an even worse idea than it was before simply because it wasn't hitting as many kids.
Well, the problem is they make decisions. The majority of the board makes decisions on the basis of emotions, not on data.
So what's the emotion attached to this program? Because Reading Recovery sponsored Reading with Rover? Which it did, by the way, which is a cute little program.
The emotions are the teachers and the parents of those who were successful in the program.
So none of the people who failed this program show up and say, this program stinks.
No.
And we think that other, you know, another kind of program should be done, we have, or at least enhance the...
We have other programs that are more successful than that at a lot less cost.
What is the cost on this particular... This program is an example that we use a lot simply because it's a great example of one that has been shown over time to have not been a success.
Right.
It is a lot of money for a child to be in this particular program. And this is a child who needs to catch up in reading, who has got language skill deficiencies, who's got, you know, any other number of other kinds of deficiencies. What's it cost?
In the neighborhood of $9,000 a pupil extra.
Extra. Now, $9,000 is what some states spend per pupil for the entire education of that pupil per year.
Correct.
And this is what we spend extra.
Exactly.
And we've got other programs, I presume, that are probably direct instruction based that are a lot cheaper and just not nearly as popular, yeah, because they probably, you know, require a little bit of extra enthusiasm and work.
But the administration drugged their feet of doing any assessment or evaluation of any other reading programs, although the board did adopt a resolution to study the rest of the reading program at elementary, but it's more than a year away.
Well, you know, we've been studying things. Look, we've been studying things for a long time.
Well,
and we're paying $225 more this year to have the exact same outcomes. Is anyone talking about the fact that the city of Madison, the Madison Metropolitan School District students, formerly the students where you were hard pressed a couple of decades ago to find somebody who'd slipped through the cracks, are now actually bringing up the rear on the Wisconsin Knowledge and Concepts Test?
Yep.
I mean, that's when we're comparable, we're not at the apex, at the top of the heap, because we're Madison. You know, we're down there with, you know, school districts like Sheboygan.
Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee.
Why?
Green Bay.
Okay. Now, the average income, the average median income in Dane County is about $56,000 for a family of four.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money. Or not a lot of money for people to pay an additional amount of money when you're talking about probably in the neighborhood of $400 to $500 on average for a property tax bill. They were just told by the state of Wisconsin that their costs are going to go up because they had to increase property taxes and fees for vehicle registration and things like that. On top of that, the mandatory insurance increase, which costs some people in the neighborhood of $400 to $500 extra a year, plus the MATC tax increase, plus Kathleen Falk's 8% property tax increase. Now, on top of that, $225 for your average house, you can actually probably see yourself toward about $1,000 increase per year just for breathing air in Wisconsin.
Well, if you're active with all those other things that were fees have increased and
indeed,
so forth.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And if you're in that regular, that median income range, you know, and you didn't get smacked by this recession at about $56,000, that's a lot of dough.
That's right.
An extra $100 a month is a lot of money. I don't care if your family's making 60 grand. 60 grand for a single person's not bad, but when you've got a couple of kids you got to deal with.
Well, or you take people on fixed income.
Exactly. John, welcome to the program. John.
Hello, Vicki.
Hi there.
Hi. I think our mistake is making the assumption that all students have equal potential. But they don't. Some kids are just dumb. And, you know, if they don't get help at home or extra tutoring or whatever, there's no amount of programs that's going to make every kid as smart as the next.
I'm just going to let that one hang there. We'll actually come back and talk about that. It's very interesting you actually said that. That is the subject of a column on today's National Review Online. Targeting resources to children who might not ever benefit from those resources, moving it away from other students who might benefit from resources, not necessarily the smartest way to spend your money. We'll be right back. All right, we'll come back here and we'll talk more about this. And I wanted to actually get to what John said, because it was an interesting comment he made, and it may sound counterintuitive and cruel. There is evidence that no amount of monies spent in the public education system targeting the at-risk kids, or no amount of monies to close the achievement gap, work. And if that is in fact true, are we dedicating our resources in the wrong place? It sounds like you're not supposed to say it, but as a matter of fact, data does back it up. Don Severson will join me after the news break. All right, welcome back to the program. All right, I just, again, I want to touch on a point that was made that it sounds counterintuitive, and yet it's not. There is data on some very good data. In fact, there was a great kind of gold standard longitudinal study done on Head Start, which is the gold standard achievement program that means to catch up children who start school behind. That it's always blamed on poverty, which of course is always blamed on capitalism. But whatever you want to blame it on, I don't blame it on those things. These children do start out with a language deficit, and this Head Start program, the beloved Head Start program, which now is taking in $9.6 billion per year, money's of course distributed into individual districts through states, produces exactly nothing in terms of closing achievement gaps, improving educational outcomes, getting kids ready for work or college. Doesn't work. Years and years and years, tons of data, over 5,000 different controls were done on the last Head Start study. And it simply is, unfortunately, whether you like to believe it or not, true, it's not working. So why dedicate the resources to a population using the exact same models of education that failed Head Start? Why do we keep dedicating more resources? And isn't a conversation required to ask, are those resources better directed somewhere else?
Either that or change the model.
Or change the model. So if you don't like resources because you think it seems unfair, then isn't it time to talk about directing resources to a model that works? And is there a model that works? There is.
Sure.
There actually is. It's called direct instruction. It's the oldie but goodie, and it does work. It actually catches kids up in their language deficits. There was a study that was done showing low-income kids can suffer from a 1 to 3 million word, 1 to 3 million word language deficit before they enter kindergarten. Wow. How do you catch kids up? Well, you don't do it through the same ridiculous kick in the can, asking them to bump into.
And you don't sustain it by doing the same things we've always done either.
Right. And a $225 property tax increase, whining about state aids, ain't going to get it done.
Nope.
Right? So actually, we're talking about bad budgeting. But if we fixed our budgeting, Don, we still wouldn't improve the outcomes that we've got. We still wouldn't improve our performance on Wisconsin Knowledge and Concepts. And I guess I'm maybe thinking that we should redirect our enthusiasm to actually, as Newt Gingrich likes to say, migrating things from the world that doesn't work into the world that works. So take your $225 property tax increase and then just use that money to do something that actually works. So tell me why the teachers' union seems to stand in the way of the world that works.
There isn't an answer to that.
There is not an answer. Yeah, there actually is an answer, but the answer is pretty crass. And it is, if you make things work, you reduce the amount of necessity for a teachers' union, the amount of necessity for the number of teachers. And so this is about increasing the power base of a political constituency. We're not bagging on individual teachers, by the way. Right. So that's what it seems to me, that unless we do this, and we're going to go to national standards if we're not careful, and we're going to see our standards in Wisconsin go to what New York standards are, and anyone who saw the New York Post article, 2 + 2 = 5 is a correct answer. When you reduce the standards to that level, I don't even see why we need to pay anybody any money to teach a kid that 2 + 2 = 5.
No.
Right?
Because any answer is correct.
Any answer is correct at that point. Just scribble some things on a piece of paper, show your work, and you're fine. You're good
yep.
to go.
Yep.
So I guess unless we change things, we're going to have a population of mouth-breathing morons, Don. And even here in Madison with the great educated parent population, that's what we're going to have.
Yeah, they'll be unskilled to be successful.
So I'm going to ask you this question. Why doesn't anyone run for the school board? How come we can't get anyone who really is interested in running for the school board? We had one, forgive the expression, half-assed candidate in Tom Farley, who announced his intention to run and then didn't bother to run a campaign.
Right.
So that wasn't even really a candidate per se, as it was a placeholder on a ballot. And we had another candidate who, frankly, said some bogus things about what he wanted to do with regard to education and budgets. And why can't we get anyone interested in caring, Don? I mean, you've got people who claim to believe that education is the ticket to, you know, the sustainability of a city.
They give up.
Why do they give up?
Well, they don't think they can make a difference. They're intimidated. They don't want to put up with the harassment. They see the dysfunction of the body itself, the system, the organization. It's useless, and they don't think they can make a difference.
And I think that's probably true because they never think they could take the majority. I mean, we can go back to 96 again, and this is how it's been. It's always been two or three in a minority trying to band together and talk some common sense. But it's always the majority that tends to overrule that minority, and they are the ones who win, and we keep kicking the can and having the same conversations about building new schools, even though we have fewer students, and not doing anything about a poorly performing achievement program, and, you know, essentially not doing anything about the discipline problems that we invite into our schools by not trying to do anything to actually structure a school in such a way that wouldn't be as difficult to manage discipline. That's a huge complaint, by the way, now, is discipline. And we got to pay more for this. And what if we change the way we elected school board representatives? What if we elected school board representatives the way we elect city council members, the way we elect county board members? Instead of these being at large, which essentially allow, you know, the teachers union pours tons of money in, and whoever's got the most money in a school board race is usually going to win the school board race. Why not make it a district-based board?
I've been saying that for years.
How do we do it?
Takes a policy change by the school board.
this is the
majority
problem.
Of the school board.
So how do we supersede the majority of the school board who will never do this because it benefits them? So how do we actually intervene and intercede to try to change things? And Paul Soglin, actually, that's where I first heard this idea, was Paul Soglin years ago mentioned this when we were having a conversation about school once. So how do we actually assert ourselves here? We're supposed to be Madison, where we allow the people to assert themselves.
Well, allowing them to and them taking the initiative to do that are two big things. Because, well, look at the voter turnout. It's abysmal. People just don't even turn out to vote. Even when you do get a good candidate, they won't vote, so they don't get elected.
What about a voter referendum on just an advisory referendum to try to send a message to the board that the vote needs to take place to make this a politically connected race? That's the whole point of this, is they claim these are nonpartisan races. Well, they're also disconnected from the citizens who are the most affected. So you can, and it's going to sound weird, politicize the school board races by making them tied to individual neighborhoods.
Well, it makes it much more accountable and much easier to communicate and be responsive to what the needs are.
And it's easier for specific needs to be met in specific areas of the city.
Right.
Instead of somebody who lives nowhere near you making decisions for you, and you scream bloody murder, but you happen to be a lone voice in the wilderness, and you're essentially drowned out, and the change happens whether you like it or not.
There is something to be said for a district-wide perspective. But to be accountable.
I think a neighborhood perspective, there's a lot to be said for a neighborhood-based perspective.
Yeah, because, you know, even though there are different kinds of problems and different magnitudes of some of those problems, there's still a lot of the same goes on across the city, which then begs the issue that we've got to have the city, county, and school district working together on issues, because the policies that are engendered by city and county, like housing, zoning, lack of economic development, blah, blah, blah.
Good point.
All of those policies contribute to the issues that get dumped on the school district.
Even something that seems so disconnected as the Jim Doyle train, it was pointed out by a school board member, Lucy Mathiak, that potentially impacts students because those students are not going to be able to walk to school. It will incur an additional cost for taxpayers if you lock out those students from being able to go to their schools via the street paths.
Right.
I mean, it's something that doesn't even seem related. But the city and the county don't get together with the school board, and the people are ultimately the ones totally disconnected because we've made it a central umbrella. We've essentially distanced people from the policies of the Board of Education because they don't really have a personal stake in it.
That's right.
They don't see their personal stake. Let's go to Jim, I think, is who's on the phone. Jim?
Or with wholeheartedly.
I'm sorry. Is your name Jim?
Yep.
Thanks, Jim, for calling in.
I was going to mention to Don, I've got a 10-year-old daughter who a couple years ago suffered a brain injury and had an IEP. And not once in 2 years did Madison ever help her, pull her aside to help her with her reading or math. But every time I walk by the special education room, all those teachers are taking care of all the kids with disciplinary problems. So I called the city, Madison School District, and I said, listen, all you're running there is a daycare for discipline problems with the special education. I said, my daughter wants to learn, and she's getting no help because all you do is take care of all the kids with disciplinary problems. So back to the point of, you know, I think it all stems on parents. You got to do something with the parents. Like if some of these parents are on subsidized whatever, start taking some of that money away to help them, their kids do homework.
Yeah, I'm with you on the parents, but I got to tell you, you can't force a parent to care. You can't. You can empower them to care, but you can't force them to care. And but your point about the discipline problems being dealt with by special education teachers, what? Why do we have special ed teachers dealing with discipline problems?
That's all it is a daycare for all the kids.
We don't need a special ed trained teacher. Because that actually requires additional specialized education to deal with discipline problems. Those teachers should be used to help your daughter.
I know. That's my point, but she gets no help.
See, but these stories are dismissed, Don. And that's he doesn't have a voice because when he goes to the polls, he's voting in an at-large election. No one's going to take care of him specifically. And the problems here, and I'm not saying they are specific to one school, maybe they're specific to one school. Maybe they're specific to a couple of schools. Maybe they're specific to one teacher. But you can't do anything about that if you don't have anyone who's got your individual interests at heart. And for all the complaints we have about the Madison Common Council, you cannot say they are not trying to stand up for individual citizens and their sensibilities inside the district boundaries. You know, we just don't happen to like the sensibilities sometimes, but they're standing up for them. No doubt.
You bet.
All right, let's go to, I'm glad he brought that up, because that actually kind of makes me mad. There is a, you know, if you need someone to babysit the discipline problems, hire a babysitter. A lot cheaper. Tom, welcome.
Hey, Vicki, how you doing?
Good.
From what I've seen, Vicki, with my own son's experience and other friends, even programs like direct instruction, I think No Child Left Behind is the worst program ever enacted in the history of this country in education.
Wait till we get done with national standards.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and combined with No Child Left Behind. I'm kind of with you, though. Go ahead.
All these programs that are coming out now, DEI, all these different ones, they're directed at getting those low-end test scores up.
True.
And we are completely ignoring our best students, and we are just muddying the waters to mediocracy in this country,
and it will be our
ending.
I disagree that direct instruction does not benefit the high-end students. It absolutely
does. It didn't help my son. He's a very high-end student. It actually watered his curriculum down.
That's different, though. I think his experience was probably because he wasn't put in a gifted program.
Most schools don't have gifted programs anymore. They've shifted all their money. That's the other thing. They've shifted all their money to bring up the bottom end to meet this No Child Left Behind stuff, and that's their entire goal.
Well, we were doing it before NCLB, too. Now we have a boogeyman to blame with NCLB, but that just federalizes more monies in education and allows them to dumb down standards even more. It's a terrible program.
But Tom was exactly right, though. It needs to be across the board with all students, top to bottom.
Well, but the reason he's also right about the resources being directed to try to bring up the bottom end. And going back to John's point, there is data to suggest all of the resources in the world isn't going to bring up the bottom end. So why leave the kids who are in the middle or at the top end of the spectrum, you know, being brought down to the level, you know, to the basic common denominator of the low end of the spectrum? And why is the low end of the spectrum the basic common denominator in not just Madison schools, Milwaukee schools and Green Bay schools and Beloit schools and all the schools in Wisconsin? Excellent point. At the same time, on the issue of direct instruction, that's a technique. If you don't put the right material into the model, So if you're, if your gifted child is being taught stuff that's boring and you already taught her, she's not going to benefit from a model because the material inside the model has been created to attract, to address the lowest common denominator. Then there's the idea of, right, of the heterogeneous education concept,
exactly,
which says the smart kids need to be put in the same class with the low achieving kids so that the smart kids can teach the low achieving kids or bring up the scores of the low achieving kids. All that does is lower the scores of the smart kids.
That's right.
Teachers ought to be the ones teaching the kids. These are all messed up concepts that never need, they don't even belong in education. They don't belong. This is not social engineering. This is teaching your kid to be competitive with the kids who are right now competing for jobs in India. You know what I mean? It's not supposed to be about fixing social ills. Jerry, welcome.
Yes. What I was calling about is back when my daughter was in sixth grade and that stuff, and that I took her out of the Madison schools and enrolled her into a surrounding school, and I won't mention the school's name and that stuff. The only reason why I felt that was necessary is because when she was in the classes and that, she was in the intelligent and gifted classes and that when she was younger and that, like kindergarten, first, second, third grade, but they didn't press her or push her to become even better. They wound up using her as a tutor, and they catered to the middle of the road, lower kids and that stuff, and the middle and to the higher end of kids that were very smart were just left alone. And she was used as a tutor for other kids, and I really disliked it.
That, I would have been outraged. I would have actually considered, in fact, this is maybe a tactic to consider. Demand compensation for your child's skills as a tutor. Because if you had to pay someone to do that, you'd pay a lot of money. And last I heard, we couldn't have uncertified educators in the schools, Don.
That's right.
So what are sixth graders doing tutoring other kids?
Yeah. If I was John Matthews in the teachers union, I'd be outraged.
Yeah, you know what? If I was this parent, I'd be outraged,
absolutely,
too. Now, he's pulled his kid out to another school, and some people are able to pull their children out and homeschool them or put them in private schools, but most people can't afford that. Again, let's go to that Dane County median income, family of four, $56,000. That's a little too steep a mountain to climb for a lot of folks.
Well, speaking a little bit to what Jim was just saying, there's a difference between teaching and learning. You know, I think teachers ought to be facilitators of learning. And if you're going to be a facilitator of learning, then the high-end kids are given better opportunities, different opportunities to learn.
Different opportunities.
Exactly. Different is a key word.
Don Severson, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We'll take
thank
a quick
you.
Break.